This week, we break down the Swiss NBL Finals and speak to Damian Martin and Kevin Lish. Let's talk some hardball. Welcome, everybody. I'm Liam Santa Maria.
And I'm Tommy Greer.
And as always, we've got our man BT in the box with the drops.
There it is! 100 cheeseburgers all around!
Yeah. Cheeseburgers, baby!
Yeah, the Hawks put up some points yesterday, Grizzle Man, and we are going to a Game 3.
Look out. Unbelievable, especially with the Kevin Lish situation in Game 1. So to feel a worry to be able to bounce back at home, super impressive.
Yeah, headed back to the jungle in that series. And then on the flip side, New Zealand, they play the waiting game. They took care of business against Melbourne. Bam, bam.
Yeah.
Straight sets.
Slapped them.
Now they just have to wait it out and watch Perth and New Zealand belt each other up.
Pretty great situation for New Zealand, really. Getting to watch these two teams fly across the country back and forth in a three-game series. I mean, that's pretty perfect
for
the Breakers.
It is quite a break, though. I mean, that rest versus rust thing has been a pertinent conversation in the NBL over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, but you know who that comment affects? Inexperienced teams.
Okay.
You know, these New Zealand Breakers, they know what they're doing. They've been here before. Not their first rodeo. They'll come out ready.
Well, we are going to talk about the Breakers. We're going to talk about what lies ahead now for Melbourne United in a little bit more detail later on. First, we're going to get into Perth and Illawarra. After breaking things down, we're actually going to talk to Kevin Lish and Damian Martin, like I said off the top, the two best defensive players, top vote getters.
Yeah, okay.
we're actually going to bring that up.
I like it.
Have a bit of a chat to the boys and see how they're feeling about all of that. And certainly, it will be really interesting to get the latest from Kevin Lish to see how he's faring ahead of Game 3.
Really well. Fingers crossed for that one. Hopefully he can take the floor in Game 3 because it'd be great to see him and Damo just going at it.
Firstly, when we look at this series, how devastating was it to see him go down just a couple of days after winning the MVP?
Oh, it was so flattening. You know, the first game of the series, I was so pumped for this one. Mm. The battle of the tempos, and then to see the league's Defensive Player of the Year, MVP, he's just been amazing all season, go down so early in that game was completely flattening. It sort of it had that feel like Perth was just going to run over this series because of that. And so, like I mentioned off the top, you know, to see Illawarra bounce back without him was just extremely impressive.
He's just so lovable too.
Yeah, he's just a nice guy. He's such an accountant. You know, he speaks like an accountant.
He really does.
He's like, oh, thanks, guys. Really good. Really good. Good to be here.
But he's kind of the most lovable. You and I over the years have talked about like just the nicest guys in the league.
Yeah.
And the nicest guys we know. He's got to go
Illawarra's
right
full
up
of them.
There.
Illawarra's full of them. Yeah, the entire team is just full of
Damian Martin's
got to
be up there in terms of nice guys.
Yeah.
For sure, for sure. Mm. It's we're almost all nice guys on the podcast tonight. Almost.
Yeah. Almost.
Almost, except for me. But the thing about Lish, I mean, we always talk, you know, offline, you know, through WhatsApp and all that. But the thing about Lish I love is he's a star player, like skilled, like a superstar.
Yep.
But he plays like a 10th man.
Yes.
He plays like he's hustling for every bit of court time he can earn.
Mm-hmm.
Diving on loose balls and his work on the defensive end. That's what does it for me about Kev.
And I tell you who else has been playing all year long for every little bit of court time that they can earn is Timmy Conrad.
Oh, this
and
guy.
And hasn't this guy stepped up in the absence of Kevin Lish over the last couple of games? Game 1, 23 points on 7 of 10 shooting.
Buckets.
He made it rain from the perimeter to keep them in that game. 5 of 7 from 3. And then just quietly in a support role off the bench in Game 2. 17 points, 7 rebounds and 4 steals on 4 of 8 from downtown. He's on the series. He's 9 from 15 from beyond the arc.
Yeah, he's been absolutely lighting it up and really adding that sort of, extra firepower for Illawarra, especially with Kevin Lish going down.
And he, you know, at the start of the season at the Blitz, he was actually, for me, the most impressive guy across the league at the Blitz in terms of who came to preseason in like mid-season form. Mm. And then he's had to kind of navigate this situation. Kirk Penny, Kevin Lish, am I the two?
Where do
am I
fit?
Three? Where am I getting my minutes? Similar to kind of Tommy Jervis with the squeeze in the front line at Perth. Both of those guys have just been fantastic at maximizing their minutes, stepping up when required, and certainly Timmy Conrad right now doing an outstanding job.
Mm.
As did Oscar Foreman yesterday.
Or talk about a good time to find some foreman. Unbelievable. You see what I did there? That was good.
Wait a minute. That's the smartest thing I've ever heard anyone say about anything.
That was very good. 450th, Grizz.
Yeah.
It's very hard to count up to 450, let alone play that many games. And Rob Beveridge spoke to him earlier in the day, and he hit him with the double whammy. He said, you know what? I don't think he went through the numbers, but he'd scored 9 points in his past 4 games.
Not enough.
Which is nowhere near enough.
Need more.
In total.
Yeah.
Not averaging.
Yeah.
And he went to him and he said, look, it's time for a captain's knock and for you to step up and lead by example. Oh, and by the way, you're coming off the bench.
This is it, Beavis. We're finally going to score.
Thank God.
that's what Rob Beveridge was saying on the bench when Oscar hit his first shot. Like, thank God, we need this guy to get off.
And you could feel and see the relief on a lot of that Illawarra team when Foreman hit that first one. You could sort of just see he turned around, there's a little smile on his face, like, oh, there it is. I knew I hadn't lost it.
Well, the funny bit about it was that they brought him off the bench to protect his foul. He'd been getting into early foul trouble. Cody Ellis, the guy who started in his place, had 4 fouls with 4 minutes left in the second quarter.
Who played quite well.
He played well. But sure to cut Oscar Foreman, 450th game, because man, called on to deliver the captain's knock. 21 points, a few boards, a steal, a couple of blocks.
Knocked out of the
seven
park.
7 of 12 shooting.
Boom.
Stepped up when required. You want to talk about Reece Martin?
I do. I want to talk about Reece Martin. I feel like he is a little bit of the unsung hero in this covering Lish situation.
Okay,
he's been the beneficiary of quite a few more minutes, quite a bit more responsibility in terms of running the show, because Lish does sometimes carry the ball and run the point guard duties. And I just think he's been fantastic. He's so controlled. I love the way he goes about organizing his team. He always seems to make the right decision at the right time in terms of when to attack and when to get it through hands. And you can see him leading. You can see him instructing his teammates at any sort of stoppage. And I just think he's played a couple of really ripper games.
The Andre Miller of the NBL.
I think he's the Andre Miller. I
would say Jose Calderon.
Oh, okay.
Lookalike.
All right.
Oh, lookalike.
I like the lookalike for sure. And I like his toughness.
Yeah, I do too.
In there against the Perth Wildcats. He ain't taking
business. Nothing.
Not a little bit of it. He doesn't want to know about it, and he's standing up against it, which I like. Just while we're on the topic of kind of toughness and business, is Matty Knight just sort of knocking and walking into anybody who walks in his path during and after, and Matty Knight
is the caveman of the NBL. Honestly, he just comes in swinging bows and arms and limbs and whatever he can to just try and whop you.
What the hell is wrong with you all?
Illawarra, Grizzleman, has won the rebounding count
twice
in both these games. You see that coming?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
What's going on?
I truly didn't.
We're going to talk to Damon Martin about this now. Obviously,
it's amazing, is what it is, because this is a team who started the year woeful on the glass. You know, it was sort of them and Melbourne United really struggled to rebound, and they did turn it around.
Made huge strides.
Yes. Second half of the season, even I think they won the majority of the rebound counts in their head-to-head games. But Perth are built on this.
Yes.
It's like New Zealand. This is what they do. We're going to out-rebound you. We've done it all year. And so to see this little, you know, this Illawarra team with only really the one legit big in AJ Ogilvy come away with two wins in the rebound column is just ridiculous.
And for me, the most important kind of battle that's taking place is when Illawarra play good D and they force Perth into a tough shot. That's when it's game on in this series because it's Perth's ability to get on the O glass.
Yeah.
And it's Illawarra's ability to finish defensive possessions and as a result get
run
the lanes and get going in transition. It's that moment in every second possession up and down the floor that's deciding this series. And at the moment, they're keeping them, for the most part, off the O glass. It was the first possession in game one. Shot went up. Matty Knight pushed, I think, Kirk Penny. They're in the zone early on, and Kirk Penny was left trying to block out Matty Knight on the weak. So I just pushed him out of the way.
Yep.
Got the ball, 3-point play. And I was like, oh, no. Kicked it out to a wide open Beal for the triple. And I thought, oh. but they've regrouped and they've done a really good job.
I can't agree with you anymore. I think that little moment in time in each of these games is what it is, and that's what leads to, for mine, the non-negotiables for each team. Perth have to offensive rebound. That's what sort of that's what gets them across the line, gets them the extra possessions, and it gets them wins. And Illawarra have to get shots up. And that means gaining those possessions, getting it down, keeping the pace in the game. So that's where both those non-negotiables come from.
For sure. And when you talk about that battle, obviously, who was it? Rob Beveridge was talking, when we talked to him about the offensive rebounding and getting the job done there, he even mentioned guys like Damian Martin and how the perimeter guys have got to do a good job of keeping those guys off the glass as well. But AJ Ogilvie in particular, not necessarily in gobbling them all up and getting kind of 15 rebound games, but his ability, like you pointed out in advance, to avoid early foul trouble, stay on the floor, play his full load of minutes. And, I mean, he's battling body after body in
just
there.
Just Jawa, Knight, Jervis, Redditch, Wagstaff. God. Oh, when will it end? They're just throwing bodies at this man. He's like, he's in a battle royale, like 12 on 1 down there.
And he has to kind of think his way through each one of those matchups, right? Yeah. Like, with each one of them, he's got to do different things to take advantage. He's got to go to different elements of his own game to get the upper hand. And he's doing that. He's staying composed when they're doing some stuff to him.
Right. Hitting him. Yep. That's fine. Yep.
And he's stepping up. He's not putting up like those kind of stat lines like we were seeing at the start of the year, but he's stepping up and really manning the middle strong for the Hawks.
He really is on both ends of the floor. I thought defensively he was exceptional in that second game. The way he was defending Jawai in the post and then stepping out and guarding guys on the perimeter, like with hard shows and getting back into position. I thought he was just, he was tremendous in that last one.
One thing you and I were enjoying watching, especially in game two, was the way Rob Beveridge and the Illawarra Hawks were putting Nate Jawai into plenty of situations where he had to navigate pick and roll coverage. And we know it's not his strength.
No, it's not. And this was relentless. You could hear it in timeouts. Yes. Bevo was like, and hopefully they can send Jawai up. Yeah, hopefully they send him up.
But they were doing a really good job of kind of reversing it until they got that situation.
The one they wanted.
Because it's not Matty Knight that you know, maybe throw him in an early one, but then eventually you want in almost every possession, you want Jawai involved in one of those. They were doing that. And he's not mobile at the best of times, but when he's got a bit of a sore back...
Yeah, even tougher.
Even tougher, and he had no interest whatsoever.
They've tried everything
in getting up there.
They've tried everything with Jawa in these situations all year. In Europe, where Jawa was playing previously, they love to flat show, which means you don't really step up on the guy coming off the on ball. You just sort of step to the side and make sure they don't penetrate into the keyway. You can't do that against Illawarra because they stop at the 3-point line and knock down a three right in the face. So you can't get away with that. They tried the icing situation. Once again, didn't quite work because the guy setting the screen would just pop and Jawai couldn't recover in time. And so Travis was pretty limited to the point where he had to sit the big fella down. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens.
He just sat him down.
Well, we got a tweet. Sounds like you guys have kind of answered it, though. But James Falero, how does Nate Jawai contribute while being exposed defensively, especially in the pick and roll?
Well, it's an excellent question. He's picking up what we're... smelling.
I'll tell you
as
how.
Well,
you got to play him real sort of pinch hitter, limited minutes in small portions of time, kind of like what Andre Lemanis did with the Boomers. He knew they were going to get a little bit exposed in pick and rolls when Jawai was on the floor, but you can still get a lot of value out of him on the offensive end, passing out of the post, even sort of just banging up and wearing down opposition bigs, putting a few fouls on them, going to work in the block. So that's how I'd be using him.
What's difficult for Trev is that sometimes throughout the season they've gone into the zone for short stretches when they've tried to hide that issue with Jawai. You can't do that against the Hawks.
No. They're just going to shoot you out of it.
They're just going to spread you right out and they're going to shoot you out of it in a couple of possessions. So he's in a tough spot. Is it a little bit of an Andrew Bogut kind of
Cleveland
Golden State
Cavalier.
Warriors against, you know, like in the finals last year situation where we literally just may not see much Nate Jawai in game three?
Yeah, look, I'm not expecting to see a lot of him, but I think they will use him.
Are we going to see 20 minutes of Jawa?
I think probably a little bit less.
Less than 15 minutes?
Oh, well, you're really nailing me down here to a time frame.
I'm sorry.
Hard to win this one.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. They are going to use him, though, to put fouls on Ogilvy. And so I would expect you see him early.
And often involved in the offense.
And often involved
in the early
parts. In low post touches, trying to put some fouls on.
All right. Now, do you know what? Let's get into a couple of guys who actually know what they're talking about with this series.
Yeah, that's it.
Kevin Lish and Damian Martin. We've got Kevin Lish on the line. Two-time MVP and the current best defensive player in the league, Kevin Lish. Thanks so much for jumping on for a chat.
Oh, thanks for having me. Good to finally be on here.
Kev.
a little cheap swinging shot.
Bang.
I wasn't expecting that.
Well, I'll tell you what, Kev. You can come back next week.
No, that's all right. I'll pass.
Yeah. No, come back for the showcase.
Yeah.
Obviously, the obvious question to start off with, what's the latest update on the ankle injury and how are things progressing?
Well, it's pretty swollen and sore and quite colorful. You know, it's as these things, as you know, they just take time and healing. And we're shooting for hopefully we make it through on Friday. And ultimately, it would be great to play in a grand final series. But it sounds boring, but I really am just taking it a day at a time and seeing how I wake up every day.
So, Kev, do you think you're a legitimate chance at playing in Game 3?
Legitimate chance? Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll take a lot going my way for that to happen. But, you know, sports can be a weird thing. Sometimes you can wake up feeling good, and other times it just takes a while to heal. But after seeing Game 2, it was very encouraging, whether I play or not, that how our team's been playing.
For sure. And you guys have been doing that all season, you know, covering for each other. But this injury kind of, it must be really frustrating in that it's not like, okay, I'm injured, I've got a surgery coming up, I'm out for three months. You know, like I was talking to Damian Martin when he strained his calf right ahead of the Oceania series when he was scheduled to play for the Boomers in the offseason. And he was like, this is so annoying because I'm going to be right in 2 weeks. I just can't play tomorrow night. You know, is it frustrating for you like that?
Well, exactly. I think the thing with, you know, soft tissue things, with ligament things, there is no time frame, and it really is just your body clock and how long it takes that to get ready. And so with that, I really can't comment on, you know, knowing when I'll be back or anything. But, you know, the timing was unfortunate. But you know what? That's sports, and you move on, and you cheer hard from the sidelines when you're there.
Can you take everyone a little behind the scenes in terms of the round-the-clock treatment? Like, are you getting up during the middle of the night, icing? You keeping it up while you're sleeping? Well, what's going on?
Yeah, keeping it up while I'm sleeping. Obviously, the nighttime, I like to finally get my sleep. So, you know, the physios at for the Hawks here, I'm actually going to his house tonight, and he's going to rub it. And you know, we're working really hard on doing everything we can.
Yep.
But with that being said, like I said before, it was just so much fun to watch our guys play in Game 2.
Kev, the curse. Those 23 straight losses to Perth in Perth. Everyone's talking about it at the moment. But interestingly, I mean, you and Bevo were obviously a big part of extending that streak when you were with the Wildcats. Does that streak matter at all in terms of this series? Like, are you guys motivated at all to break that?
Not really. And you know what? The way I look at it, too, is, you know, you got to win one of these times. So, you know, you just can't keep on losing.
Right.
So I think with every game, the stats are going with us. But like you said, I mean, I've been on the other side of it. And there's... I don't know why everyone's talking about a curse. Maybe there's something out there that I don't know of. And, you know, I've only been with the Hawks for 1 year. But it really just comes down to what team executes and plays the toughest in the end. And the team that doesn't do that is cursed, I guess. So.
Yeah, you guys seemed pretty excited after that win the other day. It didn't really seem like a team that was saying the job's not done yet. Is there anything to take out of that, or...?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of basketball to be played yet, and I think it just showed our fight. You know, all season we've been going through adversity with all the guys, you know, we've had out, and I think that just went to show that we have a lot of basketball left in us. The city of Wollongong and all of Illawarra is behind us, and it was just a really neat atmosphere.
And they really want more cheeseburgers as well.
They love their cheeseburgers.
I mean, more importantly than anything is the cheeseburgers.
Kev, we were talking earlier about how effective you guys were at placing Jawai into lots of pick and roll coverage, especially in game two. How much of a focus was that for you guys?
Well, I think the focus was really to move the ball, and I think in doing that, you know, we got him out of the lane a bit, and he's such a dominant force inside that if we can, you know, get him outside and moving a little bit more, it's to our advantage, because I think we're the smaller, quicker team in this series, so it's extremely important to do that, but to just get the ball moving.
What would making the Grand Final series mean to this team and the Illawarra basketball community? I know that you've only been there for a season, but can you feel what that would mean?
Oh, it would mean just tremendously to the whole city, because it's such a tight-knit, you know, blue-collar, hard-working city. And, you know, I like to think sometimes our team, you know, kind of rallies around that, and the whole city rallies around us, that it would just be special. I remember, you know, playing for Perth, you know, Wollongong in the finals, and it was just a really neat atmosphere they had here, and to do that again would be pretty special.
Kev, speaking about what it means to the city, has Glenn Saville or Matt Campbell came down to speak to the group ahead of Game 3 or the finals?
Well, you know, they're always hanging around sometimes at practice after games, so, you know, we have our little chats to them. We see those legends up in the stands, and they're, you know, singlets hanging down from the rafters. So there's a lot of history there, and there's a lot of great ones that have gone before us that are watching us. So, you know, I think you can only give your best.
Kev, you had a big night in Melbourne last week when you took out two massive awards, the MVP and the Best Defensive Player. Congratulations on behalf of the Hardball podcast. But when you took out the Best Defensive Player, you said, geez, going up to Perth and playing against Damian Martin after winning this award is probably not a great thing. Did you feel an extra pep in his step in those opening couple of possessions, or was it just the finals?
No, it was just the finals. I mean, that's the way Damo plays. He's, you know, he's such a good guy. You know, it is the Damian Martin Defensive Player of the Year award.
It needs to be.
But you know what? No matter what's happening around him, he's playing his same game. And, you know, that's just how he is, and that's why he's such a great player.
Well, mate, we just want to say thanks for coming on for the chat. Oh, congratulations. Congratulations on an excellent season, and boy, we really hope you can get that ankle right. If not for Game 3, hopefully for Game 3.
Yep.
But if not for Game 3, then potentially for that Grand Final series. Mate, good luck.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me, guys.
Cheers, Kev. Grizzman, good chat with the MVP.
Very good chat.
And the Defensive Player of the Year.
Oh, geez. Ooh, well, that's touchy, an interesting touchy point you make there, BT, because now it's time to chat to Perth captain, two-time champion, five-time best defensive player, Damian Martin. Damo, thanks for jumping on for a chat.
No, thanks for making room for a former defensive player. You might be short for time for an interview, so my pleasure.
Damo, you've obviously just landed back in Perth. You grew up in New South Wales, but how good does it feel to be back on Western Australian soil?
Yeah, it is great to be home. So my wife's picked me up, and she's driving me back, and it's always good sleeping in your own bed. And after last night's sleep, which was a bit restless after that frustrating loss, it'll be good to get home and then start preparing for what should be an absolute cracker on Friday against you know, Wollongong, who really put it to us last night.
Did Illawarra take you guys by surprise a bit on Sunday?
No, I wouldn't say by surprise. We thought, yeah, they're going to have to try something and, you know, speed us up, full court pressure. And it's one thing to talk about it, but then it's another to come out and execute. And full credit to Illawarra, did a great job at the defensive end, but more importantly, you know, I just felt like they never missed. And when they did, we gave up offensive rebounds, and it usually kicked out. And, you know, they just got the crowd involved. They rolled off that emotion, and some guys really stepped up. You know, Timmy Conrad was great in game one. He's backed it up again with his performance yesterday. You know, we know what to expect for Kirk Penny. But then, you know, Oscar Foreman, what a way to celebrate your 450th game.
Tell you what.
He was fantastic for Illawarra, as was AJ. So a lot of guys stepped up, and Reece Martin in the pick and roll game. So you can name each of their players and give it one or two, you know, highlights from the game. So we've got ourselves to blame for some of it. Just got to give credit to them for making big plays for others. But in the end, it's taking us to a game three, and you know, I can't wait for Friday.
So, Damo, how do you fix the rebounding issue? Illawarra not the best rebounding team in the league, but they managed to get the better of you twice. So, what have you guys got to do to come away with that category?
Oh, winning the possession game is huge. You know, in the regular season, let alone semi-finals, where everything you know becomes all that more important. So, it's not a matter of everyone thinks rebounds; they think of your big man, but it's not a matter of looking out. Power forwards and centres and putting the blame on them. Everybody has to step up and get one or two more rebounds, because you're right, they got the better of us in game one, and then to back it up after addressing the issue, and then to lose the rebound count again yesterday was one of the most frustrating things to come out of the game. So like I said, it's not on our bigs to necessarily do it. It's on all of us. And they're a three-point shooting team. And as the cliche goes, long shots, long rebounds.
Yep.
So our guards have to box out before we start running the other way. Otherwise, they'll do what we saw last night, miss a shot, get the rebound and knock down a three. And that really does give them energy. And, we obviously want to, as they say, deflate the ball and play at our tempo.
Uh-oh. Triple-double alert.
Uh-oh.
Damian Martin.
Sound the siren.
Quadruple-double alert coming here from Damian Martin.
Damo, I noticed on the exceptional Fox Sports coverage the other night that Trev Gleeson had the word discipline written in massive letters on the board at halftime. Is that just in reference to the rebound count or anything specifically?
Yeah, we're mainly sticking to our game plan. And so that can cover, the discipline covers an array of different things. We let ourselves down in different factors within the game, whether it was, our one-on-one assignments, whether it was our defensive the way we're going to play in every on-ball situation to, rebounding as well. So, look, we weren't proud of our performance yesterday for periods of it. And it's those things that, a lot of it was the mental side of the game that we can address and hopefully fix up quickly, because, we need to if we want to make the grand final.
Damo, Bevo is kind of smartly putting Big Nate Jawai into a lot of situations where he's navigating through pick and roll coverage. It was a massive issue on Sunday. What's the solution there?
Look, we've got to sit down collectively as a playing unit. Trev's obviously the head coach, so he'll have the final say. It was obvious at times that they were trying to bring him out, and Reece Martin in particular in that pick and roll. And, I'll back Nate every day of the week to be able to adjust, and he's such a big guy, but he's still so athletic. So I know he'll watch video, will adjust, and I'll back him on Friday night to be, great in the pick and roll if they do try and aim it at him again.
Damo, we alluded to it a little bit earlier, but your boy Kevin Lish stole your Defensive Player of the Year award. You can't be too happy about that.
Oh, no, look, it's... Kev really is one of those guys, he's impossible to hate.
He really is.
I tell you, he's trying his best then.
Yeah. But no, look, he's a great guy and he's a very good defender. So for him to get up there, win not only Defensive Player of the Year award, but then to see him go back-to-back with the MVP, do the double there with two of the major awards, I was very happy for him, both as... a former teammate and a friend. So good on Kev. It was certainly
good on Kev. You're out there cheering for him.
look, everyone has roles to play. I just hate that the Defensive Player of the Year can actually knock down a jump shot now. He's really put me to shame.
Hey,
he can do it all.
Excuse me. You've been knocking down a few jump shots yourself, just quietly.
Yeah, no, it has been nice. Obviously, I've been putting in a lot of work, and I keep telling people it just took me the first, 17, 18 rounds to start making some shots. quite a long warm-up, but it is good to see the last 4 or 5 weeks making some shots.
Yes, sir.
What about guarding Kevin Lish? How is that different to guarding Kirk Penny?
Look, they're both exceptional scorers, but they do have their own strengths. Kev is such a good ball handler, going both sides. So it's not like you try and send him to his left or send him to his right. He has his step back going right, you go left, and he's got a little floater, and he can have a pull-up either way. So he's a great, great offensive player with or without the ball, and Kirk's not far off either, except he's probably that little bit better at coming off pin downs and staggered screens. The way Kirk works off the ball really is world-class, and it doesn't matter if he's playing for Illawarra, playing for New Zealand, or if you're guarding someone that plays for a different international team, he's as good as it gets working off the ball.
Damo, let's just run a hypothetical for a second. And imagine that Kev Lish walks out as a part of the starting lineup on Friday night at Perth Arena. Knowing that he might be a little bit under 100%, kind of like Jerome Randall was in that kind of last round, do you think Trev would play you on Lish or on Penny?
No, I think... I love picking up full court.
Yeah.
And so whoever the ball handler is, I like to pick those guys up full court. And then if someone's getting hot, then I tend to get a little bit arrogant and switch myself onto them.
I love it. He calls his own play at the defensive end.
I love that.
That's the best.
Yeah. Sick him, Rex.
No, look, and the thing with Kev is, you know, it is a severe injury, so I highly doubt he'd be out there. But in saying that, you know, he's one of those guys that if they can tape it up, if he can, you know, take some painkillers and run on it without doing much more damage, he will put his hand up for it. So I wouldn't be completely shocked if he plays on Friday. But in saying that, you know, we're not anticipating he'll play.
Damo, the streak, 23 wins over Illawarra in Perth in a row. Bevo says that they don't think about it. Oscar Foreman said the other day, he said, nobody beats us in Perth 24 times in a row.
That's
the greatest.
Do you guys draw confidence from it?
No, I actually went, just as you're saying that, I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. No, look, it's not anything that we'll touch on at all. The last thing you want to rely on is a streak. I think someone brought up last year against Sydney some streak we had against those guys, and we lost that game. So we won't be talking about it at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a nice record to have, but that's all it is, and records are broken, and we just want to make sure that doesn't happen on Friday.
Did you guys notice that he said Wollongong off the top? I reckon, did. You know, because I've heard it a couple of times from some of the
people. It's a little spiteful. I think it's just stabbing a little needle.
It's like, you know, when the Boomers with like Anstey and Worthington, they wouldn't call the Dream Team, the American guys, by their names. They just called them the number. I reckon the Perth guys are throwing Wollongong out a little bit.
Yeah.
Just saying it's the same old team.
And look at this. I was hoping you didn't notice because quickly you followed up the next question with, yes. So anyway, Illawarra.
No, we notice. We pick up on you, that. Damo, thanks so much. Straight off the plane, jumping on for a chat. So awesome. And good luck on Friday night, mate. Grand final at stake.
All right, thanks, guys.
Awesome stuff, Grizzleman. Damien Martin, off the plane.
How relaxed
Funny
is
man.
Damo? Just coming in, bringing the laughs.
He's probably got a shut eye on the flight, I would have thought.
Yeah, he's feeling good.
Yeah, great stuff. Thank you to those guys for jumping on the show. But, boys, time now to turn our attention, wind it back a little bit to that two-game series where New Zealand won their way into the grand final.
And before we do that, just a tweet coming through using the hashtag HardballPod. This is from Andrew B. Price. Any chance you could give us all a reminder of your picks from last week's pod?
Oh, Andrew B. Price, give it a rest. Oh, we're wrong. Sorry.
Well, I don't know.
I got to say, we deserve that.
Yeah,
we deserve that.
We were wrong.
Way off.
We all thought Melbourne United was going to win the series. I will say, in my defence.
I picked them in three.
No. I only picked one game wrong.
Yeah.
I said that every home team would win their game.
Oh, yeah, that's
you
true.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay. I'll give you that.
But, you know, push comes to shove. We all picked Melbourne.
Yep. AB Price, well called out because I was way off.
Right.
I did not see that coming.
Did Melbourne United see Mika Vekona coming in that first quarter of game one?
No.
This is the question I want to throw you right off the top here, Grizz.
Go ahead.
Did Mika almost, in a way, I mean, you talk about set the tone. He certainly set the tone for the series. I mean, he got a long way to winning that series in that opening quarter.
I think he really did. I mean, he finished the game with 11 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, just filling up everything. But like you said, it was that first quarter where he came out and the way he led and the desperation he showed. The second he hit that little mid-range jumper from the elbow, and you could sort of see everyone's confidence on that New Zealand Breakers team lift. We're going to take care of business here at High Sense, and as you know, Melbourne's got work to do ahead of that.
I mentioned that little mid-range jumper on the podcast halfway through the season when I was chatting with Dean Vickerman about Mikko ahead of his 350th, and he said to me, you know, I've had a sit down with Mikko, and we've talked about like his longevity, and you know how he wants to play. He wants to sign more contracts.
He wants to play till he's 55. Yeah. And unbelievable.
And they've talked about how he's going to do that. And one of the things they've identified is he's got to establish that mid-range jumper. And they looked at guys like Sam McKinnon and Mark Bratke, who added that kind of range over the course of their career and it lengthened their career. And that's what's going on with Mika Vekona. He's been working on that mid-range.
Well, he
all
shot it like
long.
He believed it. Yeah. He shot it like he believed it.
And he was absolutely outstanding. A couple of other New Zealand Breakers, Grizzleman, who stepped it up when the bright lights were shining. Now, Sed Jackson's been doing it for the past 4 or 5 weeks.
We all knew this was coming. Everyone was prepared for Sed Jackson
to
bring.
He shot them into the playoffs to begin with, but game one, 20 points and a stat line. Game two, 19-8 with 5 dimes, 2 steals. 4 of 7 from three.
He was step backs.
Step backs. He was stepping back.
That's how I was reacting.
Choking.
That's how I was reacting when he was doing it. I was like, what? What are you doing?
I know.
It was incredible.
But he's been doing it, and he was huge. And Thomas Abercrombie, I wrote about him and his impact on the finals, Grizzle Man.
Mm.
16 points on 7-11 shooting in game one, and then, wow, did he just go berserk in game two.
He truly did.
Points.
And after that game one, I thought he was a bit of an unsung hero. Yep. I mean, he only finished had 16 points, but so efficient. Yep. He was 7 of 11 from the field, and whenever New Zealand were struggling or looking for a bucket, he came up big.
Yep. And Vickerman was talking post-game about one particular shot he hit about 4 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, when they didn't really have anything. It was late in the shot clock, and he just took one dribble, rose over Daniel, kick it long too, and knocked it down. And Melbourne United were making a run, and he sort of stymied it. He was huge. Ty Wesley in game two, there was a period of time where he was just straight unstoppable in the low block.
He is ridiculous in that low post.
Hakeem Olajuwon on.
He's Forrest got all Steele. Of it. Yeah, you name it. Anyone with low post moves, this man has all of them. Mm-hmm. He's got them all. He's got more up fakes than a David Stiff highlight reel. It's unbelievable. I tell you what, he's got them all.
Yep. The New Zealand Breakers, Chris, could we love them any more than we do? Just in terms of
if I can,
all their
honestly.
Intangibles and what they represent
and their
development.
Throws my head into a spin. It's unbelievable.
I don't know if everyone loved the Breakers, though, because there were some vicious rumours going around. Obviously, the change of... Well, not a complete change of coach, but announcing that this would be the last season for Dean Vickerman. So I think a lot of respect goes out to them for enduring through that. And
for real. That's... Go ahead.
Well, how about we hear quickly from Dean Vickerman just on the achievement of winning 9 straight final series and 11 finals in a row, which is a record, and of course, this being his last season.
Yeah, we love to be the team that does things the first time. We love to have those kind of records, and you never get bored with winning. it's so much better than going the other way. And we faced both this year, and this club is quite amazing, and the ownership. To just this New Zealand playing group, for me, the whole group did a haka for me the other day, and that's something that I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. And to see everybody within the group, our physio, our team manager, everybody get up and take the time to learn that and show that kind of respect to me. And that's what this club is really respectful, and it takes care of people and makes people better. And I'm proud to be a part of this club.
God, that's so good to hear, isn't it? And that's one of the things you spoke about, our love for the Breakers and how they've gone about their business over the last number of years. And that all comes from their culture and the culture that they've established over there. Mm. And that leads me into what you were saying, BT, about that, the adversity that they went through halfway through that year.
Mm.
When something like that happens, teams either break apart or they come together.
Yep.
I mean, it may have even been a blessing for this New Zealand team because they were wavering. Something bad happened. Their culture is established. It brings them together.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, they start playing this championship caliber basketball, which, quite honestly, we hadn't seen a lot out of them all year, right when it counts.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Good call. Let's segue to Melbourne United, because this is a team and a program that is in the early stages of developing that culture.
Yep.
And in the off-season, they put together a roster that they really wanted and felt like was going to get along, for starters, and work well together on and off the floor. And that's what happened. Daniel Kickett was saying that, this is one of the most enjoyable teams he's ever played on, just in terms of guys being on the same page, pushing in the same direction.
Mm.
That's what you want, and you can build off of that. But boy, oh boy, was it a disappointing way to finish up, when losing your last two games of the regular season and then going out in straight sets.
There's no way around the fact that it's a disappointing end to Melbourne United season. If you finish minor premiers, finish on top of the table, you expect to be playing in a grand final that season at a minimum. So definitely a disappointment. But like you said, for me, this really, it's the signs of something to come for Melbourne United. I think they have managed to put together an extremely impressive group of athletes and talent. So hopefully we can see this sort of stick together and a bit of stability here in Melbourne.
And that was the message from Dean Demopoulos after Game 2 on Saturday night. Obviously extremely disappointed that they didn't get through to the Grand Final series, but a sense of pride in what they've achieved this season.
I'm just really proud of my guys, man. This is our first time at this kind of rodeo together. Eight new players. This group here has been through it before, and they're an excellent basketball team. I'll tell you, they deserve the word champion to be by their names. They earn it, they talk it, and they walk it. Give them credit. They're better than us right now. You know, we aspire to be like them. We'd like to hang up 4 out of 5 years. And they got an excellent chance to make a 5 out of 6, in my opinion.
And good call. Good call. The key thing for me there was when he said, this is our first time at this rodeo, eight new players. The challenge for them now is to establish that kind of continuity that Cairns had for a number of years and were able to get into the Grand Final series last year, that New Zealand and Perth have had for a number of years, and bring back a majority of that roster. And that's not going to be easy to do.
No, it's not, because teams, you know, a new team entering the league and you know, other teams are going to be trying to poach the talent on that roster. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you talk about elite sport, and at the pinnacle of any game or competition, it's the tiny things that get you over the line.
Yeah.
You know, it's the inches. And one of those inches is continuity.
Yes.
And stability, and knowing that, you know, how your teammate adapts to situations and how he's going to react in certain situations. And that's something that Melbourne has lacked over the last number of years.
Yep.
And hopefully, if they can keep the majority of this roster together for a couple of seasons, you know, we'll be able to see that group develop.
And big piece of the puzzle is Chris Golding, indeed, though, isn't it? We read today he's off to Italy to play with Torino, currently bottom of Serie A. But that could just be a short-term thing, so he keeps playing before the Olympics.
It is just a short-term thing.
We hope.
Yeah. Well, it is at this point. I mean, that's what he's signed up for at the moment.
But as in, we hope that he comes back to United.
Sure. And it does start with the Australians. You know, you've got to have that Australian core of Golding and of Kickett.
Blanchfield
all signed on, ready to go around again. But also it's in the imports as well. You look at a team like New Zealand and what they've been able to build around Cedric Jackson in particular over the past 4 or 5 years. You look at the Perth Wildcats, and we spoke to Nick Marvin, and he was saying, well, what we want is, we really do want, when they re-signed Jermaine Beal for 2 years, and he said, we want to have one of those guys locked in who's like a Perth guy.
And then go recruit an X-Factor.
And I reckon maybe if they can, I mean, maybe it's not in the plans for Stephen Holt, but if they can, he would be the kind of guy that you could build around in that regard. And look, Akeem Warwick just in the same way. So you got to have some continuity with your imports as well, I reckon.
Absolutely, and I think both those guys are good candidates to hang around.
Well, that's a good leading question to a Facebook message from Min Dow. What do Melbourne United have to do this offseason to return to the playoff but make the Grand Final series next time around? Do they need a change up at the point guard position with Steve Holt? Liam, obviously you're saying they don't.
I don't think so. I mean, geez, if you can...
He's still young, Steve Holt.
Oh, hell yeah. If you can, you know, like, guys like
Steve Holt,
D-Mac, Ricky Grace, Derek Rucker, you know, Cedric Jackson, that you got a couple of years, stay in the league a couple of years. A team can build around you, get to really know where your strengths and weaknesses lie and play to your strengths in particular. Steve Holt's that kind of guy for me.
Yeah, look, and just in answering that question, I think the one thing they can go about fixing is the glass and the rebounding. That's something that I think they really need to spend a lot of time on in the offseason. I think Majuk will be more consistent, and he'll be able to push through a full season better next year.
Okay, his points are going to go up.
With a year under his belt.
Yep.
But I'd be looking to add something else to that roster that says, go get it off the glass.
Did he hit the rookie wall?
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay. And then there's another aspect of that, Grizzle Man, which is Daniel Kickett, all NBL first team power forward.
Yep.
I mean, he is a class act. He's not a rebounder.
Not a rebounder.
Never has been.
Nope.
It's not his thing. And if he's going to play in one of your 4 or 5 spots, it's always going to be a bit of an issue. But like we've seen with Illawarra, you can, you know,
adapt
and find ways around it. But it's interesting to see where they go to from here. All right, quick glance forward. Dean Vickerman was asked post-game. But BT, what was, how did this one?
Oh, it's just a question about who he thinks that they might face in the grand final series. Mm. Now, this was before game two with Illawarra beating Perth, but this is what they've been talking about around the Breakers locker room.
Yeah, you know, we kind of, we just chatted about it the other day. We chatted about that series, you know, who we thought would win it and different things. And obviously, you know, that's a little bit dependent on where Kevin Lish is at with his injury right now. But, you know, some people are in the side of, we haven't beat that team, I'd love to go play them in the finals. And, you know, some people are with the rivalry to say, yeah, you know, I'd love another crack at Perth and different things. So, you know, both of them have got pretty good stories, I think.
Love that straight shooting.
Yeah.
Team Pickerman saying, yeah, we are actually having that conversation about who we might prefer. And
even though he then went to sit on the fence. Well, he's weighing up the pros and the cons.
Yeah. He's a pretty straight shooter, Vico, and he's done an exceptional job with this team. And it's quite an emotional situation for him.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I was speaking to him about that, you know, the whole situation of how, you know, announcing he was going to leave the club, or, you know, and he hasn't really sort of said where he's going to go or what he's going to do. He just sort of said he came to the end of his time and that was it. But anyway.
All right, we have game three ahead of us on Friday. Huge, huge game. Make sure you're checking it out on Fox Sports 503.
Get
and
there.
If you're in Perth, get to the arena, of course. Who do we think is going to get up?
Perth.
I think Perth.
I think Perth as well. The Hawks fans are not going to enjoy that. Thank you to Kevin Lish and Damian Martin. Thanks to everyone who was tweeting and Facebooking in. On behalf of BTN, the Grizzleman, I'm Liam Santamaria. We've been talking hardball.